Chapter 23. At the Edge of Time. Gowan tugged urgently on Egwene's shoulder. Why wouldn't she move? Whoever that man was in the armor made of silver discs, he could sense female channelers. He'd picked Lyanna out of the darkness. He could do the same for Egwene. Light, he probably would, as soon as he took a moment to notice. I'm going to haul her up onto my shoulder if she doesn't move, he thought. Light, help me, I'll do it, no matter how much noise it makes. We're going to be caught anyway if we... The one who called himself Bao moved off, towing Lyanna, still wrapped in air, with him. The others followed in a mass, leaving the awful charred remnants of the other captives behind. Egwene, Gowan whispered. She looked at him, a cold strength in her eyes, and nodded. Light. How could she be so calm when he had to clench his teeth for fear they would start rattling together? They wriggled out from under the cart backward, moving on their stomachs until they emerged. Egwene glanced in the direction of the Sharans. Her cold sense of control radiated into his mind from the bond. Hearing that man's name had done that to her, given her a sudden spike of shock followed by grim determination. What was that name? Barid something? Gowan thought he'd heard it before. He wanted Egwene out of this death trap. He put the water cloak around her shoulders. The best way out is directly east, he whispered. Around the mess tent, what's left of it. Then on to the camp perimeter. They have a guard post set up next to what was our traveling ground. We'll go around that to the north side. She nodded. I'll scout ahead, you follow, Gowan said. If I see anything, I'll toss a stone back toward you. Listen for it hitting, all right? Count to 20, then follow me at a slow pace. But you can't go first, lest we run across some of those channelers. I need to take the lead. At least wear the cloak, she hissed. I'll be fine, he whispered, then slipped away before she could argue further. He did feel her spike of annoyance and suspected he'd get an earful once they were out of this. Well, if they'd lived long enough for that to happen, he'd accept the reprimand happily. Once he was a short distance from her, he slipped on one of the rings of the blood knives. He had activated it with his blood, as Lyalwyn had said was needed. She'd also said it might kill him. You're a fool, Gowan Drakand, he thought as a tingling sensation ran across his body. Though he'd used the Tirangrial only once before, he knew that his figure had been blurred and darkened. If people glanced in his direction, their eyes would slide away from him. It worked particularly well in shadows. For once, he was pleased that those clouds blocked out any moonlight or starlight. He moved on, stepping carefully. Earlier in the night, when he'd first tested the ring as Egwene slept, he'd been able to pass within a few steps of sentries holding lanterns. One had looked right at Gowan, but hadn't seen him. In this much darkness, he might as well have been invisible. The Tirangrial allowed him to move more quickly as well. The change was slight, but noticeable. He itched to try out the ability in a duel. How many of these Sharans could he take out on his own while wearing one of these rings? A dozen? Two? That would last right up until one of those channelers cooked you, Gowan told himself. He collected a few pebbles off the ground to toss back toward Egwene if he spotted one of the female channelers. He looped around the mess tent, following the path he'd scouted earlier. It was important to keep reminding himself to be careful. Earlier, the Tirangrial's power had made him too bold. It was a heady thing, knowing how easily he could move. He told himself he wouldn't use the rings, but that had been during battle, when he'd been tempted to try to make a name for himself. This was different. This was protecting Egwene. He could allow an exception for this.
The moment she hit the count of 20, Egwene moved into the darkness. She wasn't as good at sneaking as Nynaeve and Perrin were, but she was from the Two Rivers. Every child in Emmon's Field learned how to move in the woods without startling game. She turned her attention to the path before her, testing with her toes, she'd removed her shoes, to avoid dried leaves or weeds. Moving this way was second nature to her, That left her mind free, unfortunately. One of the Forsaken led the Sharans. She could only guess from his words that their entire nation followed him. This was as bad as the Shanshan. Worse, the Shanshan captured and used Aes Sedai, but they didn't slaughter the common people with such recklessness. Egwene had to survive to escape. She needed to bring this information to the White Tower. The Aes Sedai would have to face Demondred. Light send that enough of their number had escaped the battle earlier to do so. Why had Demondred sent for Rand? Everyone knew where to find the Dragon Reborn. Egwene reached the mess tent, then crept around it. Guards chatted in the near distance. That Sharan accent was oddly monotone, as if the people had no emotions at all. It was as if the music was gone from their speech. Music that Egwene hadn't realized was normally there. The ones speaking were men, so she probably didn't need to worry that they would sense her ability to channel. Still, Demondred had done it with Lyanna. Perhaps he had a Tarangreal for the purpose. Such things existed. She gave the men a wide berth anyway and continued on into the darkness of what had once been her camp. She moved past fallen tents, the scent of smoldering fires still lingering in the air, and crossed a path that she had taken most evenings while collecting troop reports. It was disturbing how quickly one could go from being in a position of power to slinking through camp like a rat. Being suddenly unable to channel changed so many things. "My authority is not drawn from my power to channel," she told herself. "My strength is in control, understanding, and care. I will escape this camp, and I will continue the fight." She repeated those words, fighting off a creeping sense of powerlessness, the feeling of despair at so many dead, the tingling between her shoulder blades as if someone were watching her in the darkness. Light. Poor Lyanna. Something hit the bare earth near her. It was followed by two more pebbles dropping to the ground. Gawain apparently didn't trust in just one. She moved quickly to the remnants of a nearby tent, half burned, the other half of the canvas hanging from the poles. She crouched down. At that moment she realized a half-burned body was lying on the ground mere inches from her. He was Shainaran, she saw, in a flash of lightning from the rumbling clouds above, though he wore the symbol of the White Tower on his shirt. He lay with one eye up toward the sky, silent, the other side of his head burned down to the skull. A light appeared from the direction she'd been heading. She waited, tense, as two Sharan guards approached, bearing a lantern. They didn't speak. As they turned to walk southward along their route, she could see that their armor had symbols etched across the back that mimicked the tattoos she'd seen on men earlier. These marks were quite extravagant, and so, by her best guess, the men were actually of low rank. The system disturbed her. You could always add to a person's tattoo, but she knew of no way to remove one. Having the tattoos grow more intricate the lower one was in society implied something. People could fall from grace, but they could not rise once fallen or born to a lowly position. She sensed the channeler behind her mere moments before a shield slammed between Egwene and the source. Egwene reacted immediately. She didn't give terror time to gain purchase. She grabbed her belt knife and spun toward the woman she could sense approaching from behind. Egwene lunged, but a weave of air snatched her arm and held it tightly. Another one filled her mouth, gagging her. Egwene thrashed, but other weaves grabbed her and hauled her into the air. The knife dropped from her twitching fingers. A globe of light appeared nearby, a soft blue aura, much dimmer than that of a lantern. It had been created by a woman with dark skin and very refined features, delicate, a small nose, a slender frame. She stood up from her crouch, and Egwene found her to be quite tall, nearly as tall as a man. "You are a dangerous little rabbit," the woman said, her thick, toneless accent making her difficult to understand. She emphasized words in the wrong places and pronounced many sounds in a just-off way. She had the tattoos on her face like delicate branches, reaching from the back of her neck forward onto her cheeks. She also wore one of those dresses, shaped like a cow's bell, black, with strands of white tied a handspan below the neck. The woman touched her arm where Egwene's knife had nearly taken her. "Yes," the woman said. "Very dangerous. Few of the Ayad would reach for a dagger so quickly, rather than for the source. You have been trained well." Egwene struggled in her bonds. It was no use. They were tight. Her heart began racing, but she was better than that. Panic would not save her. She forced herself to be calm. "No," she thought. "No, panic won't save me, but it may alert Gawain." She could sense that he was worried out there somewhere in the darkness. With effort, she allowed her terror to rise. She let go of all of her careful Aes Sedai training. It was not nearly as easy as she had expected. "You move quietly, little rabbit," the Sharan woman said, inspecting Egwene. "I would never have been able to follow you if I hadn't already known you were moving in this direction." She walked around Egwene, looking curious. "You watched the Wild's little show all the way through, did you? Brave or stupid?" Egwene shut her eyes and focused on her terror, her sheer panic. She had to bring Gawain to her. She reached within and opened the tight little nugget of emotion she'd packed there, her fear at being captured again by the Seanchan. She could feel it, the Adam on her neck, the name Tuli, a name for a pet. Egwene had been younger then, but no more powerless than she was now. It would happen again. She would be nothing. She would have her very self stripped away. She would rather be dead. Oh, light! Why couldn't she have died? She'd sworn she'd never be captured like this again. She began to breathe quickly, now unable to control her terror. "Now, now," the Sharan said. She seemed amused, though her tone was so flat, Egwene couldn't completely tell. "It won't be that bad now, will it? I have to decide which will gain me more, turning you over to him or keeping you for myself." Strong channeling came suddenly from the far side of the camp, where Demondred had gone. The Sharan glanced that way but didn't seem alarmed. Egwene could feel Gawain approaching. He was very worried. Her message had served its purpose, but he wasn't coming quickly enough, and he was farther away than she'd expected. What was wrong? Now that she'd let her worry out of its hidden place, it overwhelmed her, beating against her, a series of blows. "Your man," the Sharan said. "You have one of them. What are they called again? Odd that you should rely on the protection of a man, but you never reach your potential in this land, I am told. He will be taken. I've sent for him." As Egwene had feared, light. She'd led Gawain to this. She'd led the army to disaster. Egwene squeezed her eyes shut. She'd led the White Tower to its destruction. Her parents would be slaughtered. The two rivers would burn. She should have been stronger. She should have been smarter. No. She had not been broken by the Seanchan. She would not be broken by this. Egwene opened her eyes and met the gaze of the Sharan in the soft blue light. Egwene wrestled her emotions to stillness and felt the Aes Sedai calm envelop her. "You are an odd one," the Sharan whispered, still held by Egwene's eyes. So transfixed was she that the woman didn't notice when the shadow moved up behind her. A shadow that could not have been Gawain, for he was still distant. Something smashed into the woman's head from behind. She crumpled, slumping to the ground. The globe winked out instantly, and Egwene was free. She dropped to a crouch, fingers finding her knife. A figure moved up to her. Egwene raised her knife and prepared herself to embrace the source. She would draw attention if she had to. She would not be taken again. But who was this? Hush, the figure said. Egwene recognized the voice. Lyalwyn? Others noticed this woman channeling, Lyalwyn said. They will come to see what she was doing. We must move. You saved me, Egwene whispered. You rescued me. I take my oaths seriously, Lyalwyn said. Then, so softly that Egwene could barely hear it, she added, Maybe too seriously. Such horrible omens this night. They moved quickly through the camp for a few moments until Egwene sensed Gawain approaching. She couldn't make him out in the darkness. Finally, she whispered softly, Gawain? Suddenly, he was there, right next to her. Egwene, who did you find? Lyalwyn stiffened, then hissed softly through her teeth. Something seemed to have upset her greatly. Perhaps she was angry at having someone sneak up on her. If that was the case, Egwene shared the emotion. She'd been taking pride in her abilities, and then she'd been blindsided not only by a channeler, but now by Gawain. Why should a boy raised in the city be able to move so well without her spotting him? I didn't find anyone, Egwene whispered. Lyalwyn found me, and she pulled me out of a fire. Lyalwyn? Gawain said, peering through the darkness. Egwene could feel his surprise and his suspicion. We must keep moving, Lyalwyn said. I will not argue with that, Gawain replied. We're almost out. We'll want to go a little to the north, though. I left some bodies just to the right. Bodies? Lyalwyn asked. Half a dozen or so Sharans jumped me, Gawain said. Half a dozen? Egwene thought. He made it sound as if it were nothing. This was not the place for discussion. She joined the other two, heading out of the camp, Lyalwyn leading them in a specific direction. Each noise or shout from the camp made Egwene wince, worried that one of the bodies had been found. In fact, she nearly jumped all the way to the storm clouds above when someone spoke from the darkness.
Do that be you?
It is us, Bale, Lyalwyn said softly.
My aged grandmother,
Bale Domon exclaimed softly, joining them.
You found her. Woman, you do amaze me again.
He hesitated.
I do wish you'd have let me come with you.
My husband, Lyalwyn whispered. You are as brave and stout a man as any woman could wish on her crew, but you move with all of the stillness of a bear charging through a river. He grunted, but joined them as they left the edge of the camp, quietly and carefully. About 10 minutes away, Egwene finally trusted herself to embrace the source. Glorying in it, she made a gateway for them and skimmed to the White Tower. Avienda ran with the rest of the Aiel through gateways. They surged like floodwaters into the valley of Thakandar, two waves rushing down from opposite sides of the valley. Avienda did not carry a spear. That was not her place. Instead, she was a spear. She was joined by two men in black coats, five wise ones, the woman Olivia, and 10 of Rand's sworn Aes Sedai with warders. None of them save Olivia had responded well to having Avienda placed above them. The Ashaman did not like having to answer to any woman. The wise ones didn't like being ordered by Rand at all, and the Aes Sedai still thought of Aiel channelers as inferior. They all obeyed the order anyway. Rand had whispered to her in a quiet moment to watch them all for dark friends. Fear did not make him speak those words, but his sense of realism. Shadows could creep up anywhere. There were Trollocs here in the valley and some Murdral, but they had not anticipated this attack. The Aiel took advantage of their disarray and commenced a slaughter. Avienda led her group of channelers toward the forge, that massive gray-roofed building. The shadow forgers turned from their inexorable movement, showing just a hint of confusion. Avienda wove fire at one, removing its head from its shoulders. The body turned to stone, then started to crumble. That seemed a signal to the other channelers, and shadow forgers through the valley began to explode. They were said to be terrible warriors when provoked, with skin that turned aside swords. That might just be rumor, as few Aiel had ever actually danced the spears with a shadow forger. Avienda didn't particularly want to discover the truth. She let her team end the first group of shadow forgers and tried not to think too hard about the death and destruction these things had caused during their unnatural lives. The shadow spawn tried to mount a defense, some of the Murdral screaming and whipping at their Trollocs to charge and break the Aiel attack that came at them across a broad front. It would have been easier to stop a river with a handful of twigs. The Aiel didn't slow, and those shadow spawn who tried to resist were slain in their tracks, often falling to multiple spears or arrows. Most of the Trollocs broke and ran, fleeing before the thunder of Aiel yells. Avienda and her channelers reached the forges and the nearby pens of dirty, lifeless-eyed captives who had been awaiting death. "Quickly," Avienda said to the warders who accompanied her. The men broke open pens as Avienda and the others attacked the last of the shadow forgers. As they died, falling to stone and dust, they dropped half-finished Thakandar blades to the rocks. Avienda looked upward to the right. A long serpentine path led up toward the cavern maw in the side of the mountain that loomed above. The hole there was dark. It seemed a trap that tempted light to enter, then never released it. Avienda wove fire and spirit, then released the weave into the air. A moment later, a gateway opened at the head of the path up to Sheol Ghul. Four figures stepped through. A woman in blue, small of stature but not of will. An aging man, white-haired and shrouded in a multi-hued cloak. A woman in yellow, her dark hair cut short, adorned with an assortment of gemstones set in gold. And a tall man, hair the color of living coals. He wore his coat of red and gold, but under it a simple Two Rivers shirt. What he had become and what he had been, wrapped together in one. He carried two swords, like a Shinaran. One looked as if it were glass. He wore it upon his back. The other was the sword of the Tree Killer, King Laemon, tied at his waist. He carried that because of her. Fool man. Avienda raised her hand to him, and he raised his in return. That would be their only farewell, if he failed in his task or she died during hers. With a last look, she turned away from him and toward her duty. Two of her Aes Sedai had linked and created a gateway so that the warders could usher the captives to safety. Many needed to be prodded into motion. They stumbled forward, eyes nearly as dead as those of the shadow forgers. "Check inside the forge, too," Avienda said, motioning to a few of the warders. They charged in, Aes Sedai following. Weaves of the One Power shook the building as they found more shadow forgers, and the two Ashaman quickly went in as well. Avienda scanned the valley. The battle had become uglier. There were more shadow spawn at the corridor leading out of the valley. These had been given more time to prepare and form up. Aitaralda led his forces in behind the Aiel, securing the sections of the valley already taken. Patience, Avienda thought to herself. Her job would not be to join that battle ahead, but to guard Rand's back as he ascended and entered the pit of doom. She worried about one thing. Couldn't the Forsaken just travel directly into the cavern itself? Rand didn't seem worried about that, but he was also very distracted by what he had to do. Perhaps she should join him and... She frowned, looking up. What was that shadow? High above, the sun shone in a turbulent sky. Some storm clouds, in patches, some deep black, others brilliant white. It wasn't a cloud that had suddenly obscured the sun, however, but something solid and black, sliding into place. Avienda felt a chill and found herself trembling as the light slipped away. Darkness, true darkness, fell. Soldiers across the field looked up in awe and even fear. The light went out. The end of the world had come. Channeling came suddenly from the other end of the wide valley. Avienda spun, shaking off her awe. The ground nearby was littered with torn garments, dropped weapons, and corpses. All of the fighting was at the mouth of the valley, distant from her, where the Aiel were trying to push the shadow spawn back into the pass. Though Avienda couldn't see much through the darkness, she could tell soldiers were staring at the sky. Even the Trollocs looked awestruck. But then the solid blackness began to move in the sky, revealing first the edge of the sun, and then the sun itself. Light. The end was not upon them. The battle at the mouth of the valley resumed, but it was obviously difficult. Making the Trollocs retreat through such narrow confines was like trying to shove a horse through a small crack in a wall. Impossible, unless you started doing some carving. There, Avienda said, pointing toward the side of the valley behind the Aiel lines. I sense channeling by a woman. Light, but she's powerful, Nasuna breathed.
Circle, Avienda yelled. Now!
The others linked, feeding Avienda control of the circle. Power filled her. Unimaginable power. It was as if she drew in a breath, but just kept being able to take in more air, filling, expanding, crackling with energy. She was a thunderstorm, a vast sea of the one power. She thrust her hands forward, letting loose a raw weave only half formed. This was almost too much power for her to shape. Air and fire spurted from her hands, a column of it as wide as a man with arms outstretched. The fire flared as a thick, hot, near liquid. Not bale fire, she was smarter than that, but dangerous nonetheless. The air contained the fire in a concentrated mass of destruction. The column streaked across the battlefield, melting the stone beneath and starting corpses aflame. A huge swath of fog vanished with a hiss, and the ground shook as the column plowed into the side of the valley wall where the enemy channeler, Avienda could only assume it was one of the Forsaken from her strength, had been attacking the back ranks of Aiel. Avienda released the weave, her skin slick with sweat. A smoldering black column of smoke rose from the valley wall. Molten rock trickled down the slope. She grew still, waiting, alert. The one power inside of her actually started to strain, as if trying to escape her. Was that because some of the energy she used came from men? Never before had the one power seemed to want to destroy her. She had only a brief warning. A frantic moment of channeling from the other side of the valley, followed by an enormous rush of wind. Avienda sliced that wind down the center with an invisible weave the size of a great forest tree. She followed it with another blast of fire, this time more controlled. No, she didn't dare use balefire. Rand had warned her. That could widen the bore, break the framework of reality in a place where that membrane was already thin. Her enemy didn't have the same restriction. The woman's next attack came as a white-hot bar, narrowly missing Avienda, drilling through the air a finger's width from her head, before hitting the wall of the forge behind. The balefire sliced a wide swath of stone and brick from the wall, and the building collapsed with a crash. Good riddance, Avienda thought, throwing herself to the ground. Spread out, she ordered the others. Don't give her good targets. She channeled, stirring up air to create a tempest of dust and debris in front of them. Then she used a weave to mask the fact that she was holding to the one power and hide her from her enemy. She scuttled in a low crouch behind some nearby cover, a heap of slag and broken bits of iron, waiting to be smelted. Balefire struck again, hitting the stony ground where she'd been before. It punctured stone as easily as a spear went through a melon. Avienda's companions had all taken cover and they continued to feed her their strength. Such power! It was distracting. She judged the source of the attacks. Be ready to follow, she said to the others, then made a gateway to the point where the weave had begun. Come through after me, but take cover immediately. She leaped through, skirts swishing, the one power held like thunder somehow contained. She landed on a slope overlooking the battlefield. Below, maidens and men fought Trollocs. It looked as if the Aiel were holding back a vast black flood. Avienda didn't spare time for more than a quick glance. She dug into the ground with a primal weave of earth and ripped up a horse-sized chunk of rock, popping it into the air. The beam that came for her a second later struck the chunk of rock. Balefire was a dangerous spear to wield. Sometimes it cut, but if it hit a distant object, a person, for example, it caused the entire thing to flash and vanish. The balefire burned Avienda's chunk from existence in a flash, dropping motes of glowing dust that soon vanished. Behind her, the men and women in her circle dashed through her gateway and took cover. Avienda barely had time to notice that nearby, cracks had appeared in the rock. Cracks that seemed to look down into darkness. As the bar of light faded in Avienda's vision, she released a burning column of fire. This time she met flesh, burning away a coppery-skinned, slender woman in a red dress. Two other women nearby cursed, scrambling away. Avienda launched a second attack at the others. One of the two, the strongest, made a weave with such skill and speed that Avienda barely caught sight of it. The weave went up in front of her column of fire, and the result was an explosion of blistering steam. Avienda's fire was extinguished, and she gasped, temporarily blinded. Battle instincts took over. Obscured by the cloud of steam, she dropped to her knees, then rolled to the side while grabbing a handful of rocks and tossing them away from her to create a distraction. It worked. As she blinked tears from her eyes, a white-hot bar struck toward the sound of the rocks. Those dark cracks spread further. Avienda blew the steam away with a weave of air while still blinking tears. She could see well enough to distinguish two black shapes crouching nearby on the rocks. One turned toward her, gasped, seeing the attack weaves that Avienda was making, then vanished. There was no gateway. The person just seemed to fold up on herself, and Avienda sensed no channeling. She did feel something else, a faint something, a tremble to the air that wasn't entirely physical. No, the second woman said, just a blur to Avienda's tear-streaked eyes. Don't! Avienda's vision cleared just enough to make out the woman's features. A long face and dark hair as her weave struck the woman. The woman's limbs ripped from her body. A smoldering arm spun in the air, creating a swirl of black smoke before hitting nearby. Avienda coughed, then released the circle. Healing, she said, struggling to her feet. Vera Harkin reached her first, and a healing weave set Avienda trembling. She panted, and her reddened skin, her singed eyes, were repaired. She nodded in thanks to Vera, whom she could now see clearly. Ahead of her, Serene, an Aes Sedai with a teardrop face and numerous dark braids, stepped up to the corpses Avienda had made, her warder Vitalian close by her side. She shook her head. Duara and Phalian, dreadlords now.
There's a difference between dreadlords and Black Aja?
Amys asked. Of course, Serene said with a calm tone. Nearby, the others still held the one power, expecting another attack. Avienda didn't think there would be one. She had heard that gasp of surprise, sensed the panic in the way the final woman, the strongest of the three, had fled. Perhaps she hadn't anticipated facing such powerful resistance so quickly. Serene kicked at an arm that had been Phalian's. Better to have taken them alive for questioning. I am certain we could have learned the identity of that third woman. Did anyone recognize her? Members of the group shook their heads. She was not anyone on the list of Black Aja who escaped, Serene said, taking the arm of her warder. She has a distinctive face, so bulbous and lacking any qualities of charm. I am certain I would remember her. She was powerful, Avienda said. Very powerful. Avienda would have guessed her as one of the Forsaken, but that certainly hadn't been Mogadine, and it didn't match the description of Grendahl. We'll split into three circles, Avienda said. Vera will lead one of them, Amys and I the others. Yes, we can make circles larger than 13 now, but it seems a waste. I don't need that much power to kill. One of our groups will attack the Trollocs below. The other two will avoid channeling and hide nearby watching. That way we can goad the enemy channeler into assuming we're still in one large circle, and the other two can strike at her from the sides when she comes to attack. Amys smiled. She recognized this as a basic maiden raiding tactic. She didn't seem particularly put out to be following Avienda's orders, now that annoyance at Rand's presumption had faded. In fact, if anything, she and the other four wise ones looked proud. As Avienda's team obeyed, she sensed more channeling on the battlefield. Cadswain and those who followed her liked to consider themselves outside Rand's orders. They fought while another group of Aes Sedai and Ashaman held open gateways to usher through the Demonian Tyran armies. Too many people channeling all about. It was going to grow difficult to pinpoint an attack by one of the Forsaken. We need to set up traveling grounds, Avienda said, and keep strict control over who is going to channel and where. That way we'll be able to tell in an instant when we sense channeling if something is wrong. She raised her hand to her head. This is going to be very difficult to organize. Nearby, Amys's smile widened. You are in command now, Avienda, that smile seemed to say. And leadership's headaches are yours to endure.
Randall Thor, the dragon reborn, turned away from Avienda and left her and Atiralda to their battle. He had a different one to join. At last, the time had come. He approached the base of the mountain of Shale Ghul. Above, a black hole burrowed into the mountain face, the only way to reach the Pit of Doom. Moraine joined him, pulling close her rippling shawl, its blue fringe catching in the wind.
Remember, this is not the Boar. This is not the Dark One's prison. This is merely the place where his touch is strongest upon the world. He has control here.
He touches the entire world now, to one extent or another, Rand said.
And so his touch here will be stronger.
Rand nodded, setting his hand upon the dagger he wore at his belt. No channeling until we strike at the Dark One directly. If possible, I would avoid a fight like the one we had at the cleansing. What comes will require all of my strength. Nynaeve nodded. She wore her Angreal and Tirangreal jewelry over a gown of yellow, one far more beautiful than she would ever have allowed herself during their days in the Two Rivers. She looked strange to him without her braid, her hair now barely to her shoulders. She seemed somehow older. That shouldn't be. The braid was a symbol of age and maturity in the Two Rivers. Why should Nynaeve look older without it? Tom stepped up beside Rand, squinting up at the hole in the rock.
I suspect I'm not going in with you.
Moraine looked at him, pursing her lips.
Someone will need to guard the entry into the cave, my wife,
Tom said.
That ledge up there, right beside the opening, has an excellent view of the battlefield. I can watch the battle below, maybe compose a good ballad or two.
Rand smiled at the spark of humor in Tom's eyes. They stood at the edge of time itself, and still Tom Marilyn found a smile. Above them, dark clouds spun, the peak of Shale Ghul their axis. Darkness assaulted the sun until it was nearly gone, entirely covered in total oblivion. Rand's forces stopped, staring in terror at the sky, and even the Trollocs paused, growling and hooting. But as the sun slowly emerged from its captivity, the fierce battle resumed in the valley below. It announced his intentions, but the dagger would shield him from the Dark One's eyes. The Light willing, the Shadow's leaders would focus on the battle and assume Rand would wait for its outcome before striking.
Now?
Nynaeve asked, looking up at the narrow stony pathway to the cavern. Rand nodded and led the way forward. A wind rose, whipping at the four as they climbed the pathway. He had chosen his clothing deliberately. His red coat, embroidered with long-thorned briars on the sleeves and golden herons on the collar, was a twin to one of those Moraine had arranged for him to receive in Feldara. The white shirt, laced across the front, was of Two Rivers make. Kalendor was on his back, the sword of layman at his hip. It had been a long time since he'd chosen to wear that, but it felt appropriate. The winds buffeted him, threatening to throw him from the heights. He pushed forward anyway, climbing the steep hill, gritting his teeth against the pain in his side. Time seemed to have less meaning here, and he felt as if he'd been walking for days when he reached the flat area before the cavern. He turned, resting one hand against the rock of the open maw, and looked out over the valley. His forces in the valley seemed so fragile, so insignificant. Would they be able to hold it long enough?
Rand, Nynaeve said, taking his arm. Perhaps you should rest.
He looked down, following her eyes to his side. His wound, the old wound, had broken open again. He felt blood inside his boot. It had run down his side, down his leg, and when he moved his foot, he left a bloody footprint behind.
Blood on the rocks.
Nynaeve raised a hand to her mouth.
It has to happen, Nynaeve, Rand said. You cannot stop it. The prophecy does not say anything about me living through this. I have always found that odd, haven't you? Why would it speak of the blood, but not what comes after?
He shook his head, then unsheathed Kalendor from his back.
Moraine, Nynaeve, will you lend me your strength and join me in a circle?
Do you wish one of us to lead? Moraine said hesitantly. So you can use that safely?
I'm not planning to be safe, Rand said. A circle, please.
The two women exchanged a look. So long as he led the circle, another could strike and seize control of him. Neither liked the request, obviously. He wasn't certain if he should be pleased that the two of them had started to get along. Perhaps instead he should worry about them teaming up against him. That seemed like a thought from simpler days. Easier days. He smiled wryly, but knew that the smile did not reach his eyes. Moraine and Nynaeve fed him their strength, and he accepted it. Tom kissed Moraine, and then the three of them turned to regard the opening before them. It led back down toward the base of the mountain, and the fiery pit that was the closest thing this world knew to the Dark One's dwelling. Shadows from a returned sun dimmed the cavern mouth around him. Wind tugged at him, his foot warm with his own blood.
I will not walk out of this pit alive, he thought.
He no longer cared. Survival was not his goal. It had not been for some time. He did want to do this right. He had to do this right. Was it the right time? Had he planned well enough?
It is time. Let the task be undertaken.
The voice spoke with the inevitability of an earthquake, the words vibrating through him. More than sound in the air, far more, the words spoke as if from one soul to another. Moraine gasped, eyes opening wide. Rand was not surprised. He had heard this voice once before, and he realized that he had been expecting it. Hoping for it, at least.
Thank you, Rand said,
then stepped forward into the Dark One's realm, leaving footprints of blood behind.